Gene Harris on piano, Scott Hamilton on tenor sax. They both headed up the Scott Hamilton Quintet, and this is titled Blues for Gene. Also with Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, Harold Jones on drums. This is from Harris's 1990 album, At Last. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eucrise Lead, and we pick up from where we left off with each other yesterday. Just to remind you again, we are upgrading, so if we experience a little glitch here, a little glitch there, don't get overexcited. Remain calm and confident that things are under control. I wish I could say that about my life and myself. Things are not under control here in South Florida. In fact, South Florida is now the official epicenter. I'm just sick and tired of day after day of waiting for yet another shoe to drop regarding Donald Trump and his shenanigans. And on the flip side of that, the apparent inability of Congress or any other authority to rein him in. It seems to me that there should be some kind of effort made to put him away for treatment, something, because he clearly is completely out of control, and it has, for me, my personal experience is that it is extremely depressing. I don't like the idea of waking up in a country that is so out of order, so out of control, and with everything supposedly that we have available to put ourselves in order, it's just not happening. There's an unwillingness to confront the problem, the president, and his conduct, which in my view is criminal, especially as regards Mr. Stone, his good buddy and pal, they just pardoned. And any day now, we'll see the ultimate insanity in which Trump will propose to pardon himself. Any day now, such a move will be made. It is depressing to think that a country once so great, so admired in the world community of nations, that this is what it has come to, and that people are living with it every day. We have criminality gone mad, from the White House to the Station House. People are doing some things that are just unimaginable. And this is our current, quote, culture, unquote. It's very depressing. Very, very depressing. So we have to examine ourselves. What is it that we are not doing? What is it that we are supposed to be doing to force some kind of a change, even if it's short term? But this can't continue. Nobody feels thrilled about being an American at this point, that you have a clearly disturbed president and a whole bunch of people around him who have taken on that mindset as well. They're doing very unusual and I dare say criminal things and getting away with it. They're fleecing the people. They're doing whatever they want to do. They're lining their pockets. They're robbing the treasury. And this is the order of the day. Do what you want. Get as much as you want, however you can. This is the climate and culture of Washington, D.C. under President Trump, and it's it is not just confined to Washington, D.C. It is the broader culture as well. You can get whatever you want, however you want, and it's okay. It shows initiative. It shows you have initiative. But it sickens me every day that you're going to be hearing some kind, some new major dysfunction occurring in our government, and the people will be suffering even more. Every single day there's something to worry about. What has Trump done now? What is he planning to do? As I said, the only thing that he hasn't yet done is to pardon himself in anticipation of being charged with various crimes as the head of state. So that, I must admit, it has me down a bit. I can't imagine that we're in a position where we are forced to witness these things unfold, and we seem to have no way of changing things. At best, you got to wait until the general election and, you know, you elect somebody else. That shouldn't be. The problem is occurring now. You arrest it now. You solve it now. And you indicate that taking advantage of a position as the head of state, it doesn't mean that the apparatus of government and all that is government is at your beck and call, at your command. You can do whatever you want to do. I really, I'm not kidding you, this has deeply affected me. And almost to the point of, I don't want to talk about Trump. I don't want to see him. I don't want to hear about the latest scandal where money is missing or money has been appropriated illegally to do something, or there are new people who are popping up all over the place earning these ridiculous salaries. We can't figure out what the heck they are supposed to be doing in behalf of the people. But they're earning great salaries, and they're traveling around, and they're doing all kinds of stuff on the people's dime. We're paying for all of this. The country is in a state of disarray. Everybody has their own different agenda. And they're seeing to it. Many of them are about to retire. They want to make sure that there's a nice fat bonus awaiting them in the form of goodies that they have allocated for themselves. It's disgusting. And to think that this country has the nerve to point fingers at other countries and say, oh, this is a bad government. This is undesirable. This is an undemocratic society. Just shut up. I have never seen a time, well, of course, I haven't been here for 400 years, but I've never seen a time when people are so unapologetic and so openly offensive in the way that they abuse their power. I've never seen it this way or felt it this way, and it's happening everywhere. Then you have people who, I talked about it a little bit yesterday, they act like that attitude transfers even to small things, like, is it wise for you to take your family, your children, to a crowded, a packed beach? to say that you are enjoying a little downtime. This is mind-boggling. It's like everybody's lost their minds. And then they're arguing about, I don't need to wear a mask because it's my constitutional right. Everybody's now a constitutional expert. It's your constitutional right to refrain from wearing a mask? You're that stupid? How long did it take you to reach this level of stupidity? We're in the middle of a pandemic, and they're raising ridiculous arguments. Well, I'm not wearing a mask. They can't make me wear a mask. You're an idiot. And we have an idiot. An idiot's point of view prevailing in the White House over a simple thing like a mask that could have attenuated the impact of the coronavirus. But no, because of his psychological instability, his mental instability, he thinks this gives him extra points as a strong guy. I don't have to do what you told me to do. And he's trying to get rid of Dr. Fauci. And, you know, I'm going down that road already, and I want to turn back because it's going to depress me for the rest of the day to see what is happening in this country. And it appears that we're not getting anywhere with a solution except, you know, tighten your belts and try to live out the rest of his term, and hopefully enough people will vote him out. That's the only solution we have, according to what I see. Just bear with him for a little bit longer. Eventually, we'll make him go. And that, too, is depressing. You're supposed to have enough muscle by now to say, listen, you keep this up. We will have you put away in some kind of a psychiatric facility because you are a danger to the country in your position. You are a clear and imminent danger to the community that we live in, and we can't have that. Okay, so here's the task today. Sorry about that little digression, but these things happen. And, you know, I'm being very honest with you. It's been very depressing. It's been very, very depressing to watch what is happening, feel completely helpless about it. Uncertain of your future with the country being in the hands of this maniac. And then on the flip side, you don't have the kind of muscle being exercised here to counter what this person is doing. As I said, the only thing that he can do next to surprise me is to pardon himself for any future actions that he may take that are illegal. That's the only other thing he has to do. Issue a pardon to himself. Okay, so the task today makes you a historian and a documentarian who has been asked to do a concise analysis of the period 2017 to the present, which, of course, you spotted by now, coincides with the first term of President Donald Trump. You are to select two of what you believe to be his most significant accomplishments or failures during this period, and you are to tell us why you consider them especially noteworthy. Well, that's a big order, isn't it? But you can do it. So let me repeat it. Today you are a historian and documentarian who very generously has made yourself available to mere mortals like us. You are being asked to do a concise analysis of the period 2017 to the present, coinciding with the first term of President Donald Trump. You are to select two of what you believe to be his most significant accomplishments or failures in this period. And you are to tell us why you consider them especially noteworthy. Okay. So you have your assignment, and think about it for a little bit, and then you call at 888-874-4888 and discuss what you have come up with as you assess the president's term in office from 2017, when he took office officially, to present day. You have to talk in terms of history. You're a documentarian. You are a historian today. And you're pointing out to us what you consider to be Trump's greatest triumphs today, as well as his greatest failures to date. All right. I think that's enough. I don't think you need more guidance than that to get to the question. The reason we're doing this is, first of all, we wait for everybody else to do it. They will tell us what we are supposed to think. Because, of course, we have no brains of our own. We cannot evaluate our own reality. We have no way of defining where we are in the scheme of things. So we have to wait until the experts on such and such a television station or in such and such a newspaper tell us what our reality is. This is only his first term, as you know. He's gearing up for a second term and a possible self-pardon, I think. This is how crazy this country has become. So you've lived this every day, which makes you perfectly suited to be our resident historian and documentarian. You've observed all the craziness that has gone on. You certainly can put it in context for us and tell us, what should this lead us to think about this president's first term? 888-874-4888. I need you talking not as an ordinary citizen now. I need you speaking as a historian, a people's historian and documentarian. All right. You have a lot of extra instantly. So let's talk to Henry from Chicago. Henry, you're getting us started today.
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
I'm okay. We're okay. I guess I'll be the first one to attempt to be a historian. I play one on TV. But so I guess and now, you know, analyzing from this point, his most noticeable accomplishment for me is just being elected president. Because, you know, people forget that when he tried to run for president in 2012, and I think it was in 2008 or some other year, he was just a footnote in, you know, in the primaries. So many people didn't even take him seriously in the previous elections. But for what he has accomplished and taken advantage of the situation, the political situation, I think that was a major accomplishment for him to just win, period. So that would be a big accomplishment. And then the one disaster or failure of his presidency is obviously the coronavirus handling. His handling of it and the effects of what has happened with the handling of this coronavirus, much less the economy, much less the lives lost, much less exposing the medical system, the healthcare system of this country, which has always been touted to be the greatest in the world. But obviously, we have the highest corona cases in the world. But yet, you know, we're still supposed to have the best healthcare in the world. So that right there is his biggest failure as a president.
All right, you got us started. So you think his biggest achievement so far is actually being elected, because up until this time around, he didn't have a prayer. At least it appeared he didn't have a prayer of getting elected. He was dismissed as being a kind of sideshow. But in fact, he did get elected, and he got elected pretty big at the same time. And the coronavirus debacle, you hang around his neck as one of his greatest failures. Thank you for getting us started. Thank you. Francis from Connecticut, you're on the air.
This is my second time calling in, so.
welcome.
Yes. Okay, so I was thinking, racking my brain, because, like, I all this stuff went in my head. So I will agree with Henry. That was the first thing I came up with, was the fact that he even got elected. Because I know that this country has always been kind of, had this thing about celebrities. And you're always thinking, we should be following them, and look what the celebrities are doing now, and this and that. But he kind of took that and put it on steroids from his reality show. And I think just the fact that he got elected from that whole thing, I agree with Henry on that. And I would say the second thing I said, failure, I think, is he has actually put the final nails in the coffin of this country ever being great, if we ever thought it really was great financially. We're in a deficit. We're in a really bad situation. I think we're on our last throes. All the tax cuts and everything everybody was all happy about. And thinking that, this is great. Now we're paying even less taxes. Isn't this great? And, you know, just letting everything slide. Nothing's being, even as, you know, rules are on the books, everything's being disregarded. It's like all free for all, whatever money you can grab, whatever you can do. You know, it's like, it's good, you know, whatever. You know, I'm smart, you know, I know how to, you know, steal money, you know, corruption. I think this is pretty much it for this country at this point. I don't think we can come back at all with the laughing stock of the rest of the world, you know, and because of him, you know. So that's what I would say, you know, the two things.
Well, You are a ruthless historian and a ruthless documentarian, but you happen to be right, I think. Thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Glenn from New Jersey.
Hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Same to you.
So what
do you say as a historian about the significance of Donald Trump's presidency? And what do you say as a documentarian as to what he has done very well and what he has done very poorly?
Well, I sort of have a different perspective. I think his presidency has been nothing but successful, because with his accomplishments, although detrimental to the country, they have been successful from his perspective, in that he's convinced the world that the American people could be brainwashed into doing or accepting just about anything. I look at the behavior with the mask, with people following him blindly. And he's also, if you look at the coronavirus, the way that's been handled, it's been successful, again, from his perspective. His followers, supporters, cronies have all been paid. I mean, the country has been fleeced. Right. So from, say again?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, so there were many successful accomplishments by this president. Although, again, detrimental to us, ourselves, the people, but from his point of view, very successful.
Okay. On the flip side of that coin, if there is one, what would you say he has done really badly?
Although badly from our perspective, all of it. I mean, everything from him handling of the immigration policy to the economy to a disregard to the institutions and how they would normally typically serve the American public. Those are, of course, all the negatives where he's failed. But again, from his point of view, nothing but success.
Thank you very much for calling in and contributing today, Glenn. Thank you. Jerry from Connecticut, you're on the air. What do you see?
I've listened to you on and off over the years, and I found you a very rational and down-to-earth woman in most cases, but you're listening too much to the Mockingbird CIA media and believing it. I mean, you've got to take a more balanced view.
Hold on, please. Hold on. No. You're not going to give me examples because you're off topic. I'm very, very serious about when we choose a topic, we stay on point. And it isn't about me and what you find objectionable about me. We could do that another day. Today, I was very clear about what we are doing. You are a historian and a documentarian today, and you are asked to do a concise analysis of the period from 2017 up until 2020 as it pertains to Donald Trump. What have been, in your view, some of his triumphs, and what you find to be some of his failures, spectacular failures?
We all know that the media and everybody has been piling on before he even became. I mean, I don't like Donald Trump. I want to make that straight. I would like not to have to vote for him, but under the circumstances of a demented person possibly running for office, a person who basically said all sorts of things about black people in the past that basically are not being reported in the press, who had been obviously racist at some point. Maybe he changed his views. People do change. But the point is, why are we focusing so much on Donald Trump if the media won't even give a balanced perspective? I mean, I don't like Donald Trump. I don't like him at all.
You're not listening.
No, I'll give you the now. I'll give you the examples in the things that he's bad at.
He's not the last person
who speaks.
You're talking over me. This is a very straightforward exercise, and we stay on point. On this program, we stay on point. People know that I go a bit ballistic when people decide not to listen and decide to take the program wherever they want it to go. That's not today. So are you able to be what the exercise asks you to be, which is a historian and a documentarian, and to present a concise analysis of the period 2017 to 2020, coinciding with the first term of Donald Trump, what he has been spectacularly successful at, and what he has been a spectacular failure at. Are you able to do that?
Actually successful at. He destroyed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That would have made us equal to the vote of Brunei, a country that basically still has slavery of women, of not officially, but I can give you plenty of news articles if you want to go into it. They would have had the equal vote of us on a council on any sort of major economic issue. We would have been essentially the slave of every corporation that basically was paying off every corrupt institution in Asia, and that would have been horrendous. That would have made us the equivalent of Brunei, a country I can't remember exact population, but it's less than a couple of million people. And that's how that's what the Trans-Pacific, it would have made corporations above the law and above anything constitutional. Civil rights would have meant nothing. They could have literally pumped in poison to this country, and that would have been okay, because under the law, we cannot prevent the trade. That's something spectacular he did. What he does wrong, he lets this bubble-headed son-in-law, who's part of a Jewish cult that believing that this Jewish Messiah is going to rise from the grave from Queens or whatever, and every time he listens to him, he also listens to the last person he listens to. Everybody's reported is the last shiny object. That's the way he'll go. How can you make an opinion that reflects the entire country and the entire world if the last person who speaks to you is the one who gets announced on the radio or the TV that's what Donald Trump says, and he goes along with that? That's idiocy. He's almost as addled as Biden is.
Now, let me ask you, what proof do you present about Jared Kushner's religion?
You just have to look into the cult that he's part of. He's not just Jewish.
No. What do you mean that he's in a Jewish cult?
It's the particular type of Judaism that he's part of.
All right.
It's not
Jewish.
Here's
the thing we're going to have to do. You're going to have to listen in order to respond. You said, and I didn't ask you to prove it when you said it, but you said,
well, people should look up
a Jewish cult. And now, no, you can't say now people have to look it up.
Well, they're Christian cults, they're
Jewish
cults.
You said it. You are responsible for proving it. What Jewish cult? What Jewish cult are you talking about?
The Lubavitchers.
The Lubavitch are not a cult.
Well, the division that he's part of,
any more than the Catholic Church is a cult. Okay? Let's be clear. You're all grown up now. You don't have to sink low in order to land a blow or think you're landing a blow. You're using this program to malign perhaps a whole faith. I will not allow you to do that. So you have to assume that, the responsibility now.
Even within that group, but the point is the leadership is a look. There's people who join a cult, don't realize it, and they pop out once they realize.
No. We're not talking. Don't go general now. I'm speaking specifically about something you raised, and I asked you to prove it.
How can I prove something on the air that you need
then
documentation?
You need
things that he said, and part of the leadership of this cult is said. I mean, if they hate Christians and they constantly spew this in the press.
We're done with you. We are done with you. It's one thing to have an opinion. It's another thing when you can't back it up. And I am not. Personally, no matter what people normally do when they come to conclusions about things, I'm pretty circumspect about that. If I make a statement, I know how to back it up and how to tell you where I get the information from. But you're not going to come on here and propagate hate of any kind. It's not going to work. So let's move on to Gwen from New York City. Hello, Gwen. How are you doing? Gwen, are you there?
One of his best things that he did was he prevented us from going to war with Russia, which Hillary Clinton in the debates talked about bombing Russian airplanes in Afghanistan. So I think that because of his cozy relationship with Russia, we probably didn't drop bombs on their people that are also in Afghanistan. So I'm glad not to go to war with Russia. I really am. I think that there are so many failures that it's almost, you know, it's almost beyond the pale.
Pick one for the purposes of your role today as a documentarian.
I think that race relations in our country have hit a new all-time low. That's the failure. But, you know, there is a silver lining to that because he himself has made racism okay. He gives a wink and a nod to his followers, and it's really brought them out, but it's also exposed them. And I think that exposure has really invigorated a new movement and a new conversation. I don't like that he's the one who catapulted us to go to a new place, but you've got to admit that we are having conversations and we are trying to look at things in a different way. And, you know, when you look at the kids out there that are protesting, there's an awful lot of white kids that are with the black kids. And that is a very good thing that came out of a bad thing. So on that, I think he's brought racism, you know, to an all-time, racial interactions to an all-time low. But it made us have to do our job. It gave us a kick in the pants and made us hit the streets and made us, come out for things that nobody's really done in a long time. I mean, even the thing where he closed up the airports and said nobody could come in from other countries, and a lot of the people were Muslims. I was very surprised at how many people went out to the airports to protect them from being deported or illegally arrested. And, you know, so that was a good thing that came out of a bad thing that he did. But overall, I think that it's going to be that and also the huge, huge financial blow that we've received due to the coronavirus and his mismanagement of that. And I believe that we're going to see we're in a free fall right now, and I we haven't hit the bottom yet. So, everybody hang on to their hat and their money.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Gwen, for
calling
and contributing. You put some interesting things on the table for us to consider. Thank you so much. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Utrice. How are you doing?
Okay.
When I actually took my second part, but I do have another one. The first one that I would say, either negative or positive, One thing that he had done that I think has been so different, because I remember with Obama, they actually took away his phone, but he has used technology, even in a good good way or bad way, he has been able to send all those tweets and use technology for the next president when he comes around, or for generations to come. So he has used technology, even though we don't like what he does, but he tweets all the time. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. So I think that is
when,
that been
when
one.
When he should be sleeping.
What was that?
He should be sleep. He tweets when he should be sleeping.
Yes. So I said the use of technology. You like technology or not? This is something that he has put out there, and he has been the only president that he has done so many things through, you know, with his Twitter account. So that is one thing. The second thing that he had done very badly is to sign out from all these treaties, the climate, the nuclear, and also now he said we're going to get out of the WHO. And so what he's doing to this country is to put us in isolation, because sooner or later, coming out from all those treaties, this country, you know, this country going to be by themselves. Because eventually I think the Europeans, they're going to be looking into China and looking into Russia. They're closer to those countries anyway. They are in the same continent as, especially the Europeans, in the same continent as the both of them, China and Russia. So I think it's going to be a problem for this country being isolated, and being that we don't produce products that we import almost everything. I think it's a problem. I think it will be a big, mm-hmm. big problem in decades to come. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much. Well, you see what happens when you assume the title of historian and documentarian. You start seeing the world very differently and very analytically. And I like the fact that it's not about whether you like this or you don't like that. It is just seeing the thing for what it is, just seeing it for what it is. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Patrice. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello. Thank you for calling.
I'm going to start with the failure first, then the accomplishment, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Now, what I believe is biggest failure is what we're dealing with now with this coronavirus. This is, I believe, is going to be his Katrina moment. For those who understand the coronavirus is basically related to the common cold. The common cold, as we all know, has no cure.
Hold for a second. Is your window open? Are you driving?
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Basically, the coronavirus is akin to the common cold. There is no cure for the common cold. The common cold is a coronavirus. And we've been lied to believe that there's going to be some sort of vaccine that's going to come out of the blue and cure everything. I believe this is something that we're going to have to deal with. And also another thing is that they keep saying that whether we have a vaccine or not, we can achieve herd immunity. Well, as we all know, we've never achieved herd immunity for the common cold. This was a big deal, him allowing this coronavirus to run rampant the way they did. So this is his Katrina moment. Now, that being said, his failure, his biggest failure, has allowed for his biggest success, which is doubling of the national debt in less than 4 years, something that he has beaten Obama in achieving that it took him 8 years to do, which is has created, I believe, going to be the largest transfer of wealth to the 1%. We're seeing it in the stock market play out. All these companies are shut down. The economy's in the floor, and Wall Street is hitting record highs. So he has succeeded in a massive transfer of wealth. That's his greatest accomplishment for himself and his buddy.
Well, you certainly gave us an oblique angle, which is what makes it so interesting. Thank
and
you so much.
I apologize for the sound in the back. It's just that I'm outdoors.
Okay. But that's okay. At least you lessened the impact of the wind that was in affecting our ability to hear you clearly. Well, thank you. I want to thank you all because it is interesting that when you put on your hats today, your documentarian hat and your historian hat, you presented a very interesting multidimensional view. It's not wrong, it's not right, it's just the way things are. And that's a very good characteristic, a very good trait to have, because you lift yourself out of the immediate situation. So it's not really personal. You're looking at it in the broader sense. And that allows you to see it slightly differently. And I heard quite a bit of that today with a slightly different point of view coming through that isn't personal. I like that. And, of course, there are times when you have the green light to be as personal as you want. But it is important as part of your own exercise of thinking things through. What are you seeing? What concerns you? What are some of the component parts of this thing? Are you understanding it? Is it something that you just came to terms with, or you just found out, I mean, by looking at it this way, or have you seen it before? How long before articulating it had you seen it? This is very good, very, very good. So you did a great job today. I'm very proud to be in your company, and I'm very proud that you are contributing at this level to the program. It's very important to go beyond, well, I don't think this, or I think that. We're asking you to dissect the reality, whatever it is, however it falls out. How do you see it? And that is great. Certainly you have the option when we talk regularly, you can give us a very personalized view of things. And that too is important. But today I was struck by the clarity that you have and are continuing to develop about the world and how it is working. What's your place in it? How do you deconstruct it and understand it so as to be able to tell somebody or to show somebody or to make a point? And you will still be on point, but you're speaking now as an instructor. You're telling us these are things that you should look at. Not because I say so, but because they are this way. And you may want to think about it and look into it a little more deeply. That is very impressive to me, by the way. Very impressive. So, and also what's impressive is that you're not taking things personally today.
You could take things personally all you want on another occasion, because that's what I just did when I opened up this program today. I told you how it personally affected me, how I was feeling so depressed. But that is a personal reaction. And I allowed myself to do it. I told you, this is my personal feeling today. I feel angry. I feel helpless. I feel that this country should not be sinking so far and so fast without a real fight. I feel that we're being let down. The energy is wrong. The energy is one of capitulation. And, you know, we accept something that is so blatantly wrong. And we're running with it just the same. Hopefully that will change. But it is very reassuring that I may be in the minority feeling these things. And that, in fact, hearing from you today, you let me and everybody else know that not everybody is taken down this road and is going down this road like sheep. We do understand what is happening. We do have a handle on the issues. This is exceedingly optimistic and joyful to know, really. So I thank you very much for contributing today. Let's get together again tomorrow and talk about something else. Bye-bye.